Welcome to the Reverse Autoimmune Disease Summit, everybody. I'm Dr. Keisha, and you're joining me for the fourth iteration of the Reverse Autoimmune Disease series. This is the Autoimmune Detox, and I'm so happy to have back Dr. Gerald Pollack, who received his PhD in biomedical engineering from the University of Pennsylvania in 1968. He then joined the University of Washington faculty and is now professor of bioengineering. He's also founding editor-in-chief of the journal Water, convener of the annual conference on the physics, chemistry, and biology of water, and executive director of the Institute for Venture Science. His interests have ranged broadly from biological motion and cell biology to the interaction of biological surfaces with aqueous solutions. His 1990 book, Muscles and Molecules, Uncovering the Principles of Biological Motion, won an Excellence Award from the Society for Technical Communication. His 2001 book, Cells, Gels, and the Engines of Life, which is how I found you, and his newest book, The Fourth Phase of Water, Beyond Solid, Liquid, and Vapor, won that society's Distinguished Award, their highest distinction. The latter book went on to receive the World Summit Excellence Award. I'm going to stop there. Your bio goes on for a very long time with a lot of amazing accomplishments, but the thing that I wanted our viewers to know about you is that broad range, but also the narrow part of the incredible research and knowledge that you've illuminated around water. So I know when we, like you were just showing, I need to drink more of that, and you picked up your cup. You know, when we think about drinking a cup of water, I don't think we think too much about what it is that we're putting in our mouths, right?
We don't, and the water is so critical because the water, if you read a cell biology or biochemistry book, you don't hear much about water. Chapter one starts with water because water is the main component of each cell, but then it drops water altogether, and for most biologists, water is considered as merely the background carrier of the more important molecules of life. You know, we hear about DNA and RNA and proteins and all of that, and we don't hear about water. And the presumption is that it doesn't do anything. It's sort of like the bathtub full of water in which you bathe. It just sits there, and doesn't. And from the experiments that we've done, it's so totally untrue. The opposite is true, that water participates in everything that goes on inside the cell and outside the cell. And if you don't take it into account, then you're probably not coming to realize the true mechanism. So a lot of the mechanisms that are discussed in those books, I believe, may be erroneous because water is at the center of all of it. And therefore, if your body is short of water, if you're dehydrated, then you're not functioning properly. And I think, a lot of us have come to realize it from practical experience. So we get dehydrated, thirsty, and we lose our energy. It's not just a side effect, it's a central effect, because in that water, actually, there is energy, potential energy. And, I could explain why. I'd rather have some slides, but I can explain. But simply stated, without the detailed explanation, water plays a central role in virtually everything the body does. And if you don't have enough of it, you're not going to succeed. You're not going to perform at the optimum. And in some extreme cases, you're not going to perform because you need that water. And the water I'm talking about, please interrupt me when you want.
Well, I want to interrupt right here because I want to set a stage for people. 10,000 years ago in the Vedic sciences, and Ayurveda out of the sister science of yoga from India said, this is a long time ago, said, if you want to know the health of your community, look to the frogs. because the frogs are living in the water that's feeding all of us. And they're going to be the ones that show whether or not the community, you know, itself is healthy. So it's not even just water. It's the kind of water.
It's right? the kind of water. That's yeah. right. Yeah. It's the kind. And, you know, I get asked, I wouldn't say daily, but close to it. I get an email. Oh, I'm in Georgia and I'm whoever and introducing myself, and which water should I drink to maintain my health? My husband has this or that disease and I'd like to keep him healthy.
I get that asked that question too, and I don't have my name on the research you do. People are desperate to know.
Well, you know, Keisha, this is let me digress for a moment about that desperation. You know, it's easy to find out, but it needs to be done. And what needs to be done is our clinical trials on different types of water. Everybody wants to know, and everybody mm-hmm. can benefit from this sort of thing. A dozen years ago, I tried it myself because, you know, I'm independent of any of the companies who are selling the various waters, many of whom complain, of whom profess that the waters contain easy water, fourth phase water, what we discovered.
Which we'll explain in a minute. Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Or structured water mm-hmm. of some sort. That seems to have caught on. And the poor person who wants to know which water should I drink, there's nothing out there to say. So each product, so to speak, advertises their health benefits and such, but you don't know because you don't see the test and you don't know if the tests have been objective in nature. After all, these companies, many of them stand to make a profit, and I don't blame them. They want to stay in business.
Right.
But then it's sort of like the pharmaceutical industry, you know, and you don't know whether the
drug, unbiased.
Yeah. Unbiased. And so the drug companies will spend up to $10 million or something, or maybe much more than that. I can't remember the figure, but huge amounts of money to do clinical trials. Well, same thing could be done with water. It's not cheap. I'm not talking about, 10 or $100 million. I think probably it could be done $5 million, but somebody has to step up and say, okay, I'm going to do this. We could have done it. We're so deeply involved in some of the science now that I'm less sure that we have the capacity, but it needs to be done by somebody who understands something about water. And it's objective enough to do these clinical trials without any bias whatsoever. And then after 2 or 3 years, the answer will come out. You know, water A is pretty good for your health, especially if you have a kidney problem. And water B is even better. But water C doesn't do anything for this. Unfortunately, if you've got cancer, then water G and H are really good for you, but et cetera, et cetera. We don't know the answer. People ask me, they think I'm an expert of some sort. And I tell them, I don't know. I can't, it's really difficult for me to say because the clinical trials have not been done. Mm-hmm. So if any of your listeners would like to step up to the plate and fund something like this, or even partially fund it, it would be a real advance for humanity. Everybody needs to know the answer.
A very big contribution, yeah.
It would be, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, standing on my box and grandstanding about that issue, I think you're mostly interested in other aspects of water, and I can explain if you ask or whatever.
Well, let's lay a little bit of groundwork on what your lab and what your team did come up with. You threw out some terms that are maybe known to some people and maybe unknown: easy water, structured water. If you want to explain what that is.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. Well, I was saying if I fail to define those two, remind me. Okay. Mm-hmm. So we found something that almost nobody expected, except a few luminaries over 100 years, including a famous colloid chemist. The guy's name was Sir William Hardy, and obviously he must have been famous because he's got Sir before his name, British. And he said, you know, there's something weird about water. There are so many anomalies, that is, observed features that are not explained by our current understanding of water. You know, we've got a solid, liquid, vapor, but the stuff doesn't fit. And you know, if enough observations don't fit, then you have to go the extra mile and say, well, something is wrong here. And he suggested, 100 years ago, he suggested that there must be another phase of water. And a few people carried forth that general idea. One of them was Albert St. Georgi, however you pronounce it, Hungarian guy, who is considered the father of modern biochemistry. He knew that there was something beyond ordinary, this kind of stuff that we drink. And inside the cells, he was thinking that the water molecules were ordered in some way. And he even came up with a quotable quote. It was called "Life is water dancing to the tune of solids." In other words, solids were moving around, and the water was somehow in coordination with it. But perhaps the most eminent, the most serious researcher in that area is the late Gilbert Ling, who just died a year ago, and Gilbert came from China. He was in the first cohort of Chinese scientists sent to study in the U.S. And all three, they thought Gilbert was the smartest. One of them went on to win a Nobel Prize, and Gilbert deserves at least two Nobel Prizes for all that he communicated. And he held the view, and he wrote 6 or 7 books on it, that inside the cell, the water was not the same as ordinary liquid water. There was something else. The molecules were actually stacked on one another, lined up, and he called it structured water. That is different from ordinary water, where the molecules are bouncing around a furious number of times per second, randomly oriented and such. And until he died, he was quite confident that he was right. We in our experiments, inspired by mostly by Gilbert Ling, who I knew but not so well, inspired by him, we actually found that he was wrong and right. And mostly he was right, but some aspects, the evidence that we came up with didn't fit. And so what did we come up with? It was a long introduction to your question. So if you have a surface, a material, and the surface is so-called hydrophilic, that is water loving, which means if you take water and you drop it on the surface, it'll spread out. Instead of beating up like Teflon, for example, in this case, it spreads out and loves the water, water-loving, hydrophilic. Okay, so hydrophilic. So what I'm going to tell you about, it happens in most hydrophilic surfaces. So when the water meets the surface, you think nothing much happens, but actually something extraordinary happens. The water that's right adjacent to the surface undergoes a transition to a different state. That's what we now call the fourth phase, the fourth state, if you will. And this fourth phase is a sheet. And the sheet contains, if you were to look at the sheet from this direction, the sheet would looks like a honeycomb, just full of hexagons containing oxygens and hydrogens. And then the water forms a second sheet, which sticks to the first, and a third, and so on. And these sheets build on many, many, many sheets, in some circumstances, even up to 1 million or so sheets. It's a huge effect. And this kind of water that we found, all of the physical properties that we investigated differ from that of the stuff that's in this cup. It's different. It's much the way Gilbert Ling described it. However, the structure is different. Our evidence points to that. And also to the fact that it's no longer H2O, it's actually H3O2, and it's charged, usually typically negatively charged. And the region beyond these layers of water is positively charged. So you've got negative charge and you've got positive charge out there, which is like a battery, negative separated from positive. And so that's, and this is not just a laboratory curiosity, you know, because, well, I'll tell you in a moment, because you need energy to build any kind of ordered structure. If you go from chaos to order, it requires energy, a fundamental law of thermodynamics, which makes sense because, you know, not all fundamental laws make sense. This one I think makes sense because everything tends to basically to devolve into chaos unless you've got energy to support it. And we couldn't figure out where the energy comes from. It took us several years, and it was actually a student who provided the cue. I give the students, we figure out a project together, but the student knows that they've got free rein to try things that they might not ordinarily try. So this guy was doing an experiment on the bench, and there was a lamp sitting right next to him, one of these gooseneck lamps, and he put it in position and shined it on the chamber. And whatever part of the chamber was illuminated, the fourth phase grew. I should say we call it also exclusion zone, this fourth phase, or EZ for short, exclusion zone, because it excludes almost everything. It's like a crystal. So that's why we say EZ water, fourth phase water, the two are the same. Anyway, it was shining the lamp, and the EZ or fourth phase grew where it was illuminated. So he calls me in and said, "Hey, look at this." And I looked at it and I was totally amazed. I was blown away. So I said, "Well, take away the lamp and see what happens. Sometimes things are irreversible." So he pulled the lamp away, and this expanded section retracted back to its original. So we now know we know that the energy that's required to build this is light. And of course, we wanted to know which wavelengths of light were the most powerful, the most effective. And we did genuine experiments, not a gooseneck lamp shining on the chamber. And we found, and all of this is published, and it appears in my fourth phase book, and we found that infrared energy was the most powerful. So what's infrared? Well, you know, it's part of the spectrum of light. There's the visible part, there's ultraviolet at shorter wavelengths, which we can't see, and infrared at the longer wavelengths, which we can't see. But the infrared is always there. It's always there because everything out there is generating infrared energy. If you were to darken a room, completely dark, so your cell phone camera sees nothing and your eyes see nothing, and you pull out your infrared camera and aim it in a direction, you get a beautiful image of whatever it is you're facing, which means that each entity out there is generating infrared energy. It comes originally from the sun, which is 50% infrared reaching the earth, and the sun shining on all these objects, and these objects re-radiate that infrared light, and so
because we see they it. Have the stacking plates. So is that why, like, a tree would then during the daytime get those stacking plates of the water because it's lipophilic, hydrophilic?
Well, yeah. But it doesn't necessarily need the water because some of the objects are contain no water. So I'm looking out of where I'm sitting right now, and I see a wrought iron gate, and the wrought iron contains almost zero water, but you'll see it with an infrared camera because it's absorbing energy, heat, you might say, from the environment, and then it radiates heat, so we see it. So what I'm getting at is that the energy that you need for building this fourth phase or easy water is practically infinite. It's always out there, which means that wherever you have water and some kind of hydrophilic surface, most surfaces are at least partially hydrophilic, you're likely to have easy water. And therefore, it's all over the place. It's not just inside our body. It's outside. So it's what I mean by it's not a laboratory curiosity. It's all over, especially in your body, as Albert St. George and Gilbert Ling were professing all the time. But it's a little different from what Gilbert suggested. It's not merely a stacking of molecules, but it's actually a transition that occurs. And the transition builds easy water, massive amounts of easy water. And that water usually has negative charge, and it's built by infrared energy. And inside your body, you have another source of infrared energy because metabolism is generating heat, and that's infrared energy. So you have infrared energy building in your own body, and that infrared energy builds easy water. And so
from your thyroid, because your thyroid's taking your oxygen and your calories and generating the heat.
Yeah, well, that's part of it, but you know, all of the metabolic reactions that are occurring are contributing. So you have a source of infrared outside, and you and I, probably you have more than I do, but or I eat more than you do, so maybe I have more. So the infrared energy is there, it's all over. And we found that it powers a lot of things inside your body. So that it's not just the food that you eat, but the easy water that's inside your body is separating charge, it's potential energy. So from this water with separated charge that constitutes potential energy, which your body uses to do whatever it's doing. So, I'm not suggesting that the more conventional means of energy, like ATP, are not relevant, although Gilbert Ling did question that, and his questions have never been answered. It's very interesting.
We're calling into question the Krebs cycle now. Ooh, that's interesting.
well, I think we are. You know, we go to a more philosophical view that you know, nature works simply. And when I was a student, actually I was a faculty member, and I sat in on a biochemistry course the instructor was gifted. And the first half was really interesting, learning about proteins and such. And then the second half, I was advised to stay away from it. It's about metabolism, and it's so complicated that, you know, it's just not worth sitting there and learning all of those reactions. And I think we both agree that Mother Nature and her brilliance works in simple ways, not complicated ways. The answer has to be simple. And if it's so complicated that it takes a full quarter or a semester to learn the fundamental principles, stay away, I'm not sure. So it's a bit arrogant to talk about questioning the Krebs cycle. And I don't know that it's wrong, but I have a suspicion that the whole thing might be simpler. And that remains to be seen because, you know, we never consider the electrical aspects of this, the separation of charge and how this separation of charge battery, we basically got a big battery inside our body, and that battery contributes energy and it keeps getting recharged. It's like your cell phone battery. I have no cell phone, so I have no cell phone battery. I stayed away from that, getting increasingly difficult. But anyway, that battery is operating in your body. So it's not just the food that you drink that's giving you energy. It's also the electrical aspect of this, which is providing energy to your body in much the same way as it provides energy to virtually everything out there. I think it's critically important, and it's been under-recognized. So I can continue on unless you've got something you want to.
It feels like that you just adeptly and quickly explain seasonal affective disorder. You know, because here's this thing that I often will give the analogy of blackberries in the Pacific Northwest will take over your backyard, much like the jungle took over Machu Picchu. You know, if the energy is not spent to keep that at bay, right? It takes some energy to be able to.
I didn't know that it was almost overrun.
It
looks rather bare from my memory many years ago.
Yeah, many, many, many years ago, it had jungle all over it, right? And it had to be pulled back out again.
Oh, and that's probably how it was discovered, I guess.
Yes, exactly. It was hidden for some time. And so it was this big archaeological discovery when some of that started getting pulled away. It's like, oh my gosh, you know, and had to be dug out. And so, you know, this thing that you're talking about where the energy is necessary to create that space and, you know, light being what does it with water. And I just thought, wow, that's just exactly like seasonal affective disorder. You know, if people get depressed in the region of the world that we live in, which is the Pacific Northwest, where it can be gray a lot, even though there's still infrared, you know, it's still available, like you said, in the dark. It made me wonder when you were saying that.
Oh, I see where you're going.
Yeah. Okay,
sure. Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And that's why I know people in Scandinavia go south to the Middle East and such to get more sun.
Right.
A lot of depression there.
Right.
Unfortunately, we live at a latitude that's too far north. Absolutely. So it's not just physical. It's mental also. It affects every process, and of course, it affects processes in the brain. Mm-hmm. And I think that may be the reason why I know the Scandinavians are maybe more advanced than we are in some way. You know, they like saunas. And so do the Russians, and they have their banyo, which is the same.
Yeah.
And they use it all the time. And so it's heat, right? And heat is essentially equivalent to infrared energy. So, you know, you sit in there, take off your clothes, you get blasted by heat or infrared energy, and 30 minutes later, you come out like a new person. You're not depressed anymore. Mm-hmm. And they know it in Scandinavia, and I think we're beginning to know it here. And the mechanism has been not so clear, or I mean the mechanism of why the saunas work as well as they do. But I think it could actually be the infrared, because the infrared penetrates your entire body, including your skull, gets into your brain and restores your brain to its normal mode, which is not depressed, which is feeling okay about the world. So,
well, in the science behind infrared sauna therapy, you could sink a ship with it, you know, for all the different aspects that it does for your body and, you know, different ways of detoxification. And so when we see the word detoxification in association with a sauna, I love my infrared sauna. I get in it a lot. And I stay very happy and healthy, and my skin looks good as a result. And, you know, all these things occur, and you can, hearing your explanation of easy water, you could go, oh, that's why. Oh, that's what's happening. You know, you're actually increasing your H3O2, right?
H3O2. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. It's so simple, you know, that I think it might even be right.
Yeah. It's so simple. Exactly. Yeah.
You know, and the same with muscle pains. You go in with pain and you come out with less pain or no pain. And it seems magical, but it's not magical. It can't be magical. It's something is going on. And, you know, I would venture to say that it's just the easy water that's building up in your muscles and returning your muscles to their natural relaxed state, not contracted up and causing pain. So water is so critical for everything in our in our lives. And the water that you drink, you know, some of the water you drink may contain easy water, especially spring water. And some companies are coming out with what they profess to be containing structured or easy or fourth phase water. But, we're not absolutely sure. But what the body does is some of the water that you drink actually gets converted to easy water because of the infrared energy from inside and outside. And that's how you're... that's how your cells get filled with easy water, and that's how.
So, can you drink a quart of water, go in the sauna, and have it convert, or can you take your quart of water into the sauna with you? And how long will it stay in that easy?
Well, I mean, both are brilliant questions, whose answers are
unknown
as yet unclear.
You know, okay.
we do a lot in our laboratory in Seattle, but of course, you know. Right now we're limited because of COVID-19. And otherwise we're limited because, you know, you've got a certain number of people and each one is working on a particular scientific subject and you can't do everything.
Right.
It's a real frustration. And I used to have many undergraduates working in my laboratory and undergraduates I found are really open-minded. They haven't learned yet the quote facts, which are actually the opposite of the facts.
Right.
So they're open, and we discuss projects, and they do them, and sometimes it works out brilliantly. Other times it's like pulling teeth to get them to write what they've observed, you know, and turn it into a manuscript and eventually into a paper. They don't understand that what they've done is worthless unless everybody knows about it. You know, if they know about it and maybe I know about it and nobody else, doesn't do any good.
Anyone done that, what I just asked?
No.
How long does the easy water maintain its structure after the...
No, I can only tell you, we're gonna do it because it's important. And it's not so easy to do because you have to set the conditions. You know, do you let the water sit in the sun or not in the sun? Do you use colored containers, as you were mentioning the Ayurvedic studies from 10,000 years ago or even 7,000 years ago and such? And I have someone in my lab who comes from India, and she remembers that her father would do that. And a lot of sun. You put these containers in the sun. One is blue, one is green, one is red. I don't remember all the colors. And depending on what's afflicting you, grandpa or dad or whatever, pulls out the right bottle and you start drinking that water and you get better. Isn't it amazing?
Simple.
So simple. And our ancients were so brilliant. And they understood what works and what doesn't work. And, you know, they didn't have penicillin. But they knew how people could get better, because when you think about it, you know, the people in the Ayurvedic era were just as intent on staying healthy as we are. And they seem to have had good means to do it. And I'm actually thrilled by the kind of renaissance that I feel is going on now in medicine, where people are coming to recognize that the boundaries that are set in modern medicine are so narrow, and, you know, doctors are allowed to do only what remains within the boundaries, because if they go outside the boundary, they may be sued, even though they know that the solution actually lies here, not in between those boundaries. And it's a pity.
It feels like we're starting to expand outside of the germ theory era that we've been in, and moving into maybe germ theory and terrain theory can live side by side and both have some value, because the terrain is the water in which the cell lives. And
yes.
And that's this idea that it's just the cell, you know, as you were mentioning, that's so short-sighted and so narrow. And so this idea of, well, what's the hot tub that your cells are bathing themselves in? You know, what's happening there?
Yep.
When you were talking about Dr. Ling, I was envisioning, you know, the chaos of water as opposed to structured, you know, built on each other water and the plates you were describing. And I was thinking about the ancients and some of their breathwork practices. I just taught one last night on a webinar for a group of people with autoimmune thyroiditis, Hashimoto's. And I was showing this pranayama exercise where you actually hum really loudly. And it bathes this area in oxygenated blood. But what's really going on there is when you think about vibrating liquid, what's going on right there? And I started thinking about that and I thought, oh, I wonder if that process, because this is one of the things that all those years ago, Ayurvedic rishis were saying, this will heal your thyroid. So when you said all of that, I thought, oh, the thyroid is the one that takes the calories and in the oxygen. And actually there's a receptor in every single tissue in the body for thyroid hormone. And so that's interesting. You know, if you're doing that bumblebee breath is what it's called, Brahmari, is it vibrating the water into this exclusion zone? You know, is that what's going on? And it, who knows, but I was seeing the chaos go into some order with that vibration. And I thought, well, that's fascinating. Did they know that all that time ago? You know,
maybe we don't give them enough credit for what they actually knew. There are plenty of wise people there, but I think you're onto something because, you know, if you impart sound waves to water, then the water does tend to structure. You know, you can see various patterns. You take some like a speaker that vibrates this way, and you put a plate that contains water, and the water will organize into some nodes and anti-nodes in characteristic ways depending on the frequency. And so there's some kind of ordering of the water, or structuring of the water, if you will, that occurs. And you know, and the healing is manifest. So I'm thinking immediately of the Tibetan healing bowls. You know about those?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
Yeah. So you know that the sound is, it can heal. Yeah. But there's actually more than that. We had a couple in the laboratory, and probably you're familiar with this, but maybe your listeners are not so familiar. If you get one of these bowls, you fill it with water, and then you rub your fingers on the rim, and a hum or some other gadget,
the mallet.
You can do it that way, and. And it starts to hum, and after about 20 or 30 seconds, something magical happens, which is still not well understood. From the water contained in the bowl, the water droplets go up. It's like upside down rain. I don't know if you've ever seen this, but
I have not.
Oh, everybody should do this and see this. Buy a Tibetan healing bowl.
I have several of them, so I'll have to try it out.
Try it. Fill it with water and start rubbing. And after you rub and hear the sound, wait 20 or 30 seconds. And if your bowl is like the bowl that my wife and I first experienced somewhere in Germany at a museum, or you get one of your own on Amazon or what have you and do it, and you'll see. It's fascinating because these droplets will rise up to 2 or 3 feet, and then come down again. You know, it's kind of that demonstration is kind of almost the same, almost as powerful as the one where you take a balloon and you rub the balloon on your sweater, and you have a faucet of water coming down slowly, and you have the balloon gradually approach the stream of water, and the stream bends. It's not just 5 degrees; it bends markedly. So
yeah. I've seen that one. That's amazing.
Isn't it? Yeah. All of these obviously have explanations but they're interesting. I think I'm deviating from, I forgot.
You're not at all, because going back to that pranayama exercise I was talking about that I demonstrated last night in this webinar, the other outcome of that, you know, Brahmari breath of just doing a repetition of 7 full breaths in this manner. So just an inhale and an exhale, humming as loud as you can.
Yeah.
What occurs is also a complete clearing of the mind stream. So that all I ever want to do after I'm done with that is meditate. Everything clears and calms. And so it's like the brain gets ordered too. The mind stream gets ordered, you know, and then it can sit in quiet, in silence and stillness. And people that say, oh, I can't meditate, you know, I'm too chaotic. I was just picturing what you were describing, Dr. Ling talking about, of this chaos versus this order. And I thought, gosh, you know, they knew this about pranayama. I know they did, because this is the advice that you do before you sit and meditate, is you do these different breath work exercises. So anyway, I thought that was quite fascinating. I want to spend the rest of our time talking about ways to increase structured water or easy water, because I know that you've done a series of experiments in your lab of, you know, like, I know one time we talked and you were saying, you know how when you're a child and you love getting buried in the sand, there's this grounding effect that happens and that affects the water in your body. So what are some of those things?
Well, first of all, let me ask you, I'll tell you, I'll respond, but I had that experience myself. I was probably 8 or 9 years old, buried in the sand. I don't remember anything from that age except that incident, because the feeling of well-being and happiness while buried was so profound that I didn't want to get unburied. It was time to go, you know, and they had to unbury me. I was buried up to here, sitting in there for maybe 30 minutes or so, and connected electrically to the earth, although I would never have thought about the electrical connection to the earth at age 8.
Right.
But it was so powerful, and that's why I remember it to this day. It was my friends, and they were having fun burying me. So what does that mean? So finally, after many years, practically infinite, where I am today, I think I understand the reason, and the reason comes from what we experience in the laboratory. That is, when you connect yourself to the earth electrically, you're connecting yourself to a reservoir, a huge reservoir of negative charge. I'll come back to that in a moment. But you know, I started my career studying electrical engineering. No professor ever told me, and these were, you know, smart people, no professor ever told me that the earth was negatively charged. They thought it was neutral. So that, for example, when you plug into a receptacle, you've got the three prongs, and this one is neutral, but it's not connecting to zero. It's connecting to a vast reservoir of negative charge on and inside the earth. I never heard of such a thing, and my colleagues never heard of it. And I'm sure that people who go through advanced education have never heard of it. In Russia, every middle school student knows about this. So the education systems are different. And when this was presented to me, that the earth was negatively charged, I was in shock. I said, this is impossible. It came from a Russian colleague who was he was in my lab for 6 months, about to take off home for Russia. And he was telling me about the negative charge of the earth and the electric field that comes as a result of that, not magnetic field. I said, Andre, when did you ever hear of this stuff? He said, everybody knows it. Don't you know it? I said, I never heard of such a thing. He said, well, your educational system must be deficient in some ways. So I went home that evening, and he was off on his flight to Russia, thinking, if this is true, it's amazing, and I never heard of it. And how come I never heard of it if it was so clear to him this was true? Next morning, one of my students brings me the lectures of the great physicist Richard Feynman. And almost every graduate student in physics reads these lectures because he was funny and he was clear. He touches on almost everything in physics. And there's a whole chapter, volume 2, chapter 9, that discusses the negative charge of the earth. So when I got buried, I got buried near the water, damp, conductive, connecting myself to a huge amount of negative charge. We know from laboratory studies that if we add negative charge to water, that builds EZ. And so I'm thinking, I've got EZ in my body. and I'm connected to negative charge. And what must be going on is that in my body, easy is getting built. And I think this is the mechanism. It's why if you do that, or if you go to a mud bath, or even swimming in the ocean, usually you feel good, or walking barefoot on the beach. And the reason you feel good is simply that, because you're connecting yourself to negative charge, which builds easy water in your body. And with more easy water, you function better. It's not just your muscles, but your brain also. So you're in a feel-good state, which is, I guess, the default state, not the depressive one. So that's one way. Second way, drink a lot of water. I mentioned that because that's the raw material for building easy. Third way, another way is to do juicing. And I think you do that.
Every morning.
Every morning, yeah. So you know more about it than I do. My late wife used to do that, and I appreciated it. So you go out, you take some fresh leaves of some sort growing in your backyard, fresh, vigorous, and you squeeze the hell out of them using a machine or not a machine. There are machines that you can buy that do this very effectively. And you drink this water. With some extra flavoring to make it palatable, maybe some strawberries squeezed in or something. I'm not sure what you do, but what is this water? This water is water from the inside of plant cells. And these are fresh, vigorous plant cells, and they're full of easy water. So you're actually putting easy water into your body. And so you don't need to convert ordinary water into easy water. It's there in what you drink. So you bypass a step. And from what I've heard from various medical professionals who do this, it's really effective. And if you go on Mercola.com, who's famous for his pronouncements on health, he says this is the simplest thing that you can do to improve your health. And you know, I believe it. It just requires a little bit of effort to do it.
You can put a little chunk of ginger in there.
There you go, ginger.
Chunk of turmeric, some cilantro, you know, and oh, it's just so good.
And that's why you're so healthy. You look like you must be the queen of health. Everything about you says health. Yeah, well, good for you. Okay, so that's another one, juicing. We talked about electrical stuff, sunlight. So right now, you know, as Keisha mentioned, in the Northwest, we don't see too much sun, especially during the wintry half of the year. And when the sun comes out, people feel really good. And the theory is, well, you know, it's a purely psychological issue. And I don't deny that. However, there's also a physical aspect to it, because when the sun comes out, it contains a lot of infrared energy, and beating down on us, we receive infrared energy directly, and that infrared energy builds easy water in our head, our brains, and elsewhere, and we go to the default state, which is happy, pleased, content, not irritated, not depressed, or anything like that, and I think this could contribute to why, when the sun comes out, we all feel good, like right now. The sun has just come out, or at least where I am. It's very nice. And then, of course, in the sauna, you maximize that because you're getting huge amounts of infrared energy. But it's not, the last one that I'll mention is some kinds of foods. And here we go back to Ayurvedic times. And you mentioned several times turmeric. So people have known, even in modern times, that turmeric is good for your health, almost no matter what ails you. Take turmeric and basil also, but holy basil. And turmeric is good for health, but why is it good for health? It's good for so many things. And, you know, there are two possibilities. One is that there are receptors, shall we say, for turmeric all over the body, and you take it, these receptors turn on some process and whatever. That's a complicated one because there are so many processes inside your body that are improved when you take turmeric. A simpler one is that turmeric builds easy water. and you need easy water throughout your body. And so you get it by eating turmeric. We tested this and published it. We found that turmeric in modest amounts, amounts that you're likely to have inside your body, build easy water. They expand easy water from the amount that you have to a bigger, larger amount. Turmeric does the same, going back to, basil does the same, going back to the Ayurvedic era. And so does...
we're talking about Tulsi when
Tulsi.
Yeah,
right.
Holy basils is Tulsi, you guys.
Tulsi.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. I have someone from India in my lab, and so she says holy basil all the time.
Right.
I forget, yep. It's the same. Yeah. And speaking of Ayurvedic, ghee, we tested ghee, or clarified butter, and it builds the biggest easies we've ever seen. It's huge. It's just amazing. Yeah. So those are a few. We even tested aspirin, which comes from the bark of the willow tree. It's natural. Same thing, builds easy water. So, and over a fairly wide concentration range. So many of these, I think we studied 7 or 8 of them. And every single one of these agents that are known to improve health build easy water. And so we think the mechanism underlying the improvement in health lies in the buildup of easy water. Hmm. So that's yet another route. So I've listed, I think, a half dozen different, relatively simple routes that lead to improved health.
Going out into the forest.
Going out into the forest, you hug a tree.
Maybe
you do, but not everybody does. And the same thing, the tree is negatively charged, just like we are. All the tree cells are negatively charged. In fact, more negative than we are. The electrical potential difference in our cells is minus 60, minus 70 millivolts inside negative. And in trees, it can be 150 or 200 millivolts negative. So it means if you hug a tree, you're getting the benefit of some of that electrical energy which seeps into your body. There may be more to it. I'm not suggesting that's all, but this is probably one way. And the story goes, it started with George Washington. And once upon a time, he would bring his physician with him. I don't know if he was paranoid or perpetually ill or whatever. And he was at some kind of conference, out in the woods somewhere, and he wasn't feeling well. He went to his doctor, and the doctor told him, hug a tree. So he picked out a tree, and George Washington grabbed the tree and hugged it for a matter of 10 minutes and felt better.
Mm.
Maybe it's apocryphal. I don't know how real it is, but I could imagine that this may have been actually more popular a few hundred years ago than it is now.
Mm-hmm.
If you see someone hugging a tree now, you think, lunatic. What is this weird person doing? But I think what this weird person is doing is gaining electrical charge. And we need negative electrical charge, which is an easy water to keep us going. And in fact, physiologists and biologists have measured the electrical potential in all kinds of cells. I did it myself at the start of my career. You use an electrode that Gilbert Ling invented. Should have gotten the Nobel Prize for it, because so many things that followed from that earned Nobel Prizes, and he was right at the core. So stick the electrode into the cell, and you measure a negative electrical potential. So the textbook says this negative electrical potential is caused by some kind of gadgetry in the membrane. That includes pumps and channels of various sorts. And I've written papers suggesting that mechanism is erroneous for various reasons, which I think if anybody looks at them, they're very simple reasons. I think a lot of people who are unbiased who look say, there's something wrong with this. But now it's easy to understand why the cell is negative, because the water inside the cell is negatively charged, not neutral. Therefore, if you stick an electrode in, you measure negative electrical potential. So So a lot of things are, I think, I hate to use the word wrong, but a lot of the things that we believe are ground truth might not be ground truth.
In a non-dual tantric Shaivism, a path of, you know, insight and learning about yourself, there's this statement that I just love that they used to say in ancient times, and they called it the near enemy of truth. Where there's a near enemy of truth where it's almost there, and then people will use that as the reflection, and it just gets them off just that much, you know, so they're not quite there. So we'll call those near enemies of truth.
Well, sometimes I think those enemies are far enemies, because the educational system that we go through tends to reinforce.
Right.
You know, we get rewarded for memorizing these arcane and complicated mechanisms, and the ones who can memorize them best are the ones who score, and the ones, in fact, who often will go into science. Mm-hmm. So
it's true. And the thing I want to end with, because we're out of time, is,
oh my goodness, yeah.
Before COVID, I used to take groups to Peru a lot. And there's this place that is up above Chinchero, and we climb up on all these rocks, and then we go into this little opening, and it's like a little cave, but it's got this opening that you can then look out over the vista.
Yeah.
And you're enclosed by the earth, like it's like a womb. And
oh, yeah.
Spend 10 minutes in there and come out feeling incredible, you know? And it's like, where are those places where you live? You know, we've talked about forests, we've talked about ocean, lake, meadow, stream, you know, cave. You can find these places and then spend some time with them and just see how you feel. You don't need science to tell you anything. You can check in with yourself and just say, how do I feel as a result? Like Dr. Pollack said, I remember this thing from 8 years old. Right. Mm. I remember this experience. And so your body will actually tell you if it likes what you're doing, which I think is important to remember.
Absolutely. If it likes what you're doing.
It likes what you're doing. Yeah.
Well, that's an interesting story. Yeah. I wonder whether it's the infrared that comes from the rock that's penetrating your skull that makes you feel so grounded, happy, whatever you feel, the natural state of your brain.
And a lot of those rock areas in that area have a lot of crystal in them too, which of course absorb that energy too. So they're negatively charged. So there's probably a lot of resonance with your body that's occurring there. But my point is you don't have to live by the ocean. You don't have to bury yourself in sand every day. You know, there are all these different ways that you can get these effects. And I think that's important to remember.
I think you know them better than anyone.
No. I so appreciate you taking the time again to, you know, to share this information, Dr. Pollack.
It's always nice to connect. I'd love to.
Thank you
for the opportunity. Right. Okay, take care and enjoy the sun.
Be well, everybody. Until next time.